3. If you're going to make me laugh before I do this. Welcome to the Poor Rikes. We are poor and we talk about it a lot. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Poor!
Poor! We're motherfucking poor!
Is that ever going to not be funny?
When I first thought about it in my head, I was laughing. I was like, oh my gosh, that's I wasn't sure how it would sound when I did it, you know, uh-huh. But I wanted to have fun with it. I was like, I'm going to, and I surprised you with it.
Yeah, you did.
In my head, I was like, this is some funny shit right here.
I guess if it stops being funny, we'll stop doing it. But anyway.
So we were sitting here casually chatting, and we were also snacking.
Snacking and popping.
My sister does have topics to talk about today. But we also ended up, since we were sitting here and just chilling before we started recording, we were just chilling and chatting. So we do have a couple random little parts that we can continue our conversation with. I actually don't remember what the hell. Oh, what we were just talking about was, because we were setting up my microphone for our recording. I have to move it whenever we decide to work together and record. And we were talking about the P's and the S's and the microphone and the pop filter.
Yeah, I said I'm not a suppressive person, but he had already stopped recording.
Because
testing for the S's and the P's.
We were doing a test, a voice check, and she was like, S, P, S, P, S, P, S, P, and I was like, what the hell are you doing? and then she reminded me it's because of the pop filter stuff. So what that reminded me of was I actually had an instructor, I think it was sixth grade.
Yeah, for speech impediment.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Because I used to do a lot of, I can't remember what exactly it was with the SVPs.
I don't either. I never noticed anything. Mom told me later.
I think I remember it, but I couldn't like demonstrate it because I don't remember how I used to do it. But basically, I think I had a lisp when I was a kid. And so I don't know, like, if it was just part of my accent or I just didn't know how to properly say words, you know?
I think if you were sent to a speech therapist, then probably it might have been...
Probably didn't understand, like,
yeah,
how to properly say enunciate or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Because that's what they did. They just helped me, like, be able to say the S and the T and the P properly and whatever.
Did you feel self-conscious about doing that?
I don't remember feeling self-conscious. I remember thinking it was weird. because I think even going through it, like I said, I don't remember it. Like, my memories are always so weird. Like, yeah. I can remember that, but I can't remember it fresh. Like, I know it happened.
But sometimes you have to, like, tell yourself the story and then, like, you remember details of it. Like,
I never did that, though. You always apparently go over stories.
Well, you know,
I never did.
So I had always remembered, because we talked in a previous episode about face blindness and how I realized that I had face blindness. And the incident where I had thought my mom was a kidnapper had always, like, it had faded into, like, this weird, funny, mm-hmm. kind of, like, odd time in my life, mm-hmm. as opposed to terrifying and awful, yeah, which it actually was.
In the moment.
And so I wanted to write a short story about it for one of my creative writing classes. And it was a creative nonfiction. And so I was like, okay, that's a good topic. So I started writing about it. And then I was, remembering... like that I was going to try to push you out the door first, or no, I was going out the door first so I could push you back in if I saw a white van with a kidnapper inside.
What a trip, man.
And then I'm just thinking about, like, and then I'll push him back inside and lock the door and then call 911. And, like, I'm doing all this in my head. And then while I'm writing this, the phone rings and I'm just like, ah! Like,
wow.
Because it was so intense, and, like, I didn't remember
when,
it.
When were you writing this?
Oh, let's see, 2011-ish?
Quite a while ago.
It was my last semester of GCC. I had an elective that I needed to take, and that one, it was, like, the third time I could... So you could take creative writing 3 times for credit for an English degree, like an associate's degree.
It seemed like you really liked that one.
Yeah, I really liked my teacher. Her name was Angela Morales, and her specialty was creative nonfiction. So I'd never really had an appreciation or even a knowledge that it
That's
existed
so
before.
Mm.
And then she was really good at it. She was very patient with me. I was such a know-it-all in that class.
Well, you are a know-it-all.
Yeah.
That's because you're so damn smart. No, you know what? So just in case you're curious as a listener of what specific story she was referring to, we actually we talked a lot about that in episode 4.
Was that 4?
Yeah, it was our most recent uploaded one. We still don't have 5 up yet.
So
and we're recording 10. Just so you know, we're recording 10 and we have not uploaded episode 5 yet.
Yeah. So like for me, when I realized like what that memory had faded, and when I was actually going back and like trying to describe it, that was when I realized how scary it was.
I really want to drink the beer.
That's fine.
I'm sorry.
That's fine.
Okay, sorry.
So you don't remember a lot of stuff, but if you like went over it in your head, you'd probably remember.
Which I never details. Did. You know what's funny? It's interesting to me. You know what? You know, it's interesting. I think it's also just we approach things and think of things differently and whatever. Mm-hmm. Because I have never had to retell myself my story about my hand bleeding. You know, I can picture the rock that literally I fell and tripped on and landed on. I can picture it.
Yeah.
It was a knife edge rock. It was round shape on the end, and then the rest of it was like a jagged knife edge. Like, it was nuts, right? Like, I think about it now, because that's not a normal rock.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. You know, like how you leave laying around a children's playground.
it was definitely not a normal rock. It was a very irregular shaped rock. Like, I don't know how it ended up that way, but because it was a rock.
Yeah.
It was literally a rock. And I can also picture our home. I can literally picture our home. I can walk around inside of it.
Oh, wow.
Upstairs, downstairs. I can picture the snow. I can picture the driveway. I can picture the street down like 2 blocks.
Wow.
And that's on the spot.
I can't.
Literally right now on the spot, on the fly. And there's no stories I've ever had to tell myself. I can just picture it. I don't know why. That's very weird. And it always trips me out because I'm like, dude, my memory sucks. Why can I naturally just automatically pick these pictures out? It's nuts.
Well, I think it's you remember the stuff that's important to you.
That wasn't I mean all that stuff that I can picture is I have no feelings towards it other than I really liked the area and our house. Like, it was nice, you know. Mm-hmm. And the hand bleeding thing was definitely, it's just
I mean, that's memorable.
It's definitely memorable.
It's blood spurting
it was a fountain of blood. It literally was, and it was spurting upwards. An upwards fountain of blood, you know, like I'll never forget.
I know, like a water fountain. I know. Yeah. Mom described it to me and she was just
it
like,
literally was spurting, man. It was just a flow of just a fountain of blood, just psh, psh, psh. And I can still picture that. It's nuts. It's great. Because the rock I can picture too. I can picture it both before I landed and landed and it cut my hand, and after when it was covered in blood. And I'm just like, how the fuck do I remember stuff like that? So like in my brain, it like, you know, is nuts.
I mean, I have specific things that I can remember too, but it's blurry. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't have a good visual memory. Mm-hmm. So I can't. Maybe that's why I tell myself the stories over and over, is because if I don't, then they just fade.
Well, I mean, I think that's why I wonder, and I can't help but think that it's just a different approach and a different mentality, because I don't care to tell myself the story over and over again.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think spending a lot of time alone makes you a little introspective. And I always wanted to figure out, I think even before Bubba died, like I was always a little bit like inside my own head. Mm-hmm. And
I mean, I am too, but my head is video games.
I always wanted like a sense of control. Like, I remember in kindergarten, we had we had the toys like in the little play area, and there was like a cash register and like,
I remember that actually.
Yeah, like some little store. Yeah. I always wanted to be the cashier, and dreams do come true, children.
God, nightmares. Nightmares that you thought were dreams.
I mean, when you're 5, being a cashier is very glamorous. You seem like you're in charge of the money.
Oh yeah.
Like, you don't know the difference. Like, I remember Bubba used to be obsessed with I don't remember this. Mom told me this. Mm. He used to be obsessed with money, so he had requested Mom to buy him a receipt book. You know, like,
I remember, I think I've heard the story
back in the 70s when we were infants. this is the early 80s, actually. there, instead of like computers and stuff, like you would write out a hand receipt. So on the top
would be the
copy for the customer.
Totally forgot about that.
And then you'd have like the duplicates underneath that like you get from pressing it with a pen.
They still exist, but incredibly rarely.
Yeah. And Bubba demanded one of those, like he requested frequently and vehemently for one of those receipt books because he felt like if he had one, then he'd be in charge of the money.
Bubba is our dead brother, just as a reminder. In case you haven't heard a previous episode.
Previously on the Poor Rights.
Oh, I keep forgetting. I've actually thought about doing that on an episode. It'd be like, previously on, like just as a joke kind of a thing, you know, anyways.
I was not obsessed with money, but I was obsessed with power when I was a kid. I really like, I just felt like the absence of it so often that I just really wanted, I wanted to be in charge of shit.
Well, I still want power.
I don't give a shit anymore. But
well, I mean, I don't give a shit only because I can't give a shit. It doesn't matter if I want power, I'll never have it.
I don't think I want it. Like, I just genuinely just want to chill. Like, I just want to chill and be.
I want power, man. I do. Because I am sick of the people in power being pieces of shit.
Yeah, I am.
Generally,
too.
That's everything. That's not even just politically. That's literally everything ever, you know?
I think I came really close to, like, having that feeling of, like, I'm really in charge of things when I was working at Flappers.
And when, you know, I'll tell you, I forgot. It's very small sometimes, but if you ever get in a position where you can actually do something, doesn't that feel good? And not because you can tell people what to do. It's not because you can control people, but it's because you can control aspects of that position where you actually do have the chance and to make things okay. You know,
you think you do.
Yeah.
And then you find out you're wrong.
Yes. Yes.
No, like legitimately.
That part is really cool.
Like, I had been around Flappers long enough to have seen things that I was like, why is this like this? If I was in charge, you know, like how you do when you're in other people's businesses. and so I was like, if I'm ever the booker, here's how I'm going to run shit. No more fucking bringer shows. Yeah. You know, I'm just going to book people I think are talented and let their reputation build from there, et cetera, blah, blah, blah.
And for some reason, it just doesn't work that way.
Well, it doesn't work that way when nobody else is on board to have it work that way.
Oh, yeah, because you're constantly fighting the normal, like...
It is hard to build word-of-mouth recognition
for
a small business, but it's especially hard when the business owners don't give a shit about their own reputation. So, I shouldn't say that.
No,
but I did.
There's a whole lot that goes into that, too. There's... you know what that reminds me of? I can't remember the exact quote and I can't remember who said it, but basically, the older you get, the more you lose the fight, which is where, you know, I'm at.
That's
so children are easier trained into being more strong for themselves.
You have a sense of like what's fucked up and you have the energy to try to fight it.
I really wish I could remember what the quote is, but it's basically like that. Like, an older person will lose the fight. They'll be dead. You know, you just can't bring them back to the fight, so you have to rely on the younger people. So it's not that they don't it's not that they don't care exactly, but they had to force themselves not to care.
You just get worn down. Get ground
down. You can't keep fighting. You fought for so fucking long that you just can't do it anymore.
Yeah,
it's a trip. So I wish I could remember. We were talking specifically because we were talking
power.
About your club. Your...
Yeah. So when I got promoted, I was like, hell yeah, here's what I want to do. I was not promoted to replace my previous boss. I was promoted to do a piece of his job. So he was in charge of booking three rooms over two clubs, and I was in charge of booking the smallest room at one of the clubs. And I was down because I loved the Yoo-Hoo room and I loved the comedians who were there. I loved the MCs. I loved the the kids coming in to try for the first time or second time. And I loved the kids who had been there for a while. And I loved the headliners. And I fucking loved everybody in that room. I loved the servers. I loved every aspect of that room. I just wanted to be mine. I had so many plans for, like, decorating
it. The Crystal Yoo-Hoo room, or the Crystal Room is what they should have called it after that point.
Actually, my title in the first Burbank Comedy Festival was Queen of the Yoo-Hoo Room. On my, nice. I still have my name tag. Yeah.
That. You're such an asshole. Like, I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That's cool.
And then I think the next year was Yoo-Hoo Room Goddess or Yoo-Hoo Goddess or something.
Oh my gosh. That's awesome.
Yeah, that was pretty great. I think it's just because they didn't want to put Booker on my tag. But anyway, whatever.
Oh, I see. I got you. That's kind of funny. Yeah. Booker would work, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, so...
That's awesome, man. You know what's funny? You know what that makes me think of? Is how technically my job, I'm a game master.
Uh-huh.
But realistically, it's garbage and I'm just basic customer support.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's so freaking funny. Yeah. Because I will, like, people will be like, what's your job? I'm a game master, motherfucker. You know?
Well, the difference was, like, I could actually, like, make decisions about, like, but I was so limited. Anyway. So my plans for the Yoo-Hoo Room were... I'm going to make sure that all the shows are good with people on it that I like. And, like, I mean, that I think are funny and that, mm-hmm. you know, are cool to work with. And then, and I'm going to figure out how to get them paid. I know what I want the room to look like. Like, and then even outside the room, I was decorating that in my head. Like, I just had a whole fucking theme.
Yeah.
And
you just couldn't bring it into reality.
No, it was so frustrating, but I was so excited at first. Yeah. And the first conversation I had with Barb, after I got promoted, she was like, I want to know your plans for the Yoo-Hoo Room. And the first thing I said,
Barb was one of two of her main bosses.
So Barb and Dave are the owners.
Yeah.
I love them both. They're both very flawed, wonderful They're human cool beings.
People. Yeah.
And
I met them too. They were very cool.
Yeah. And, like, genuinely, like, they're not trying to be bad people. They're just living in capitalism and trying to survive.
Reality. Yeah.
If you're trying to build a dream in capitalism with no money, like, you're going to have to make some compromises.
And we're talking about, like, two really good people that run a business that literally can't go outside of that system because when they try, everything goes down to hell, basically.
I don't know if I agree with that.
I'm just trying to generalize.
I think that the way that I would phrase is what you said earlier, they had been ground down by the system to think that this is just the way that it has to be.
Yeah. They got stuck.
I walk in and I'm like, hell no. If we're in charge, we get to decide the way that things are.
Yeah.
You know, because there's no, like, if it's your business, then you get to decide what it is. And, like, and they're like, yeah, but bills. And I'm like, I'm like, fuck bills. Well, let's risk this business going down on the premise of...
Which is not an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, like,
it's an easy decision for me to make when it's not my business and not my house and not my...
We literally just talked about this when I said I've been at this point for a long time and I want to just quit my job. And it's not, I don't necessarily hate my job. I just, I'm done working.
Yeah.
I can't fucking work anymore. I just can't. Mm-hmm. It's cause I really don't hate my job. I actually don't hate the actual job, but I just don't want to fucking do any of it anymore. And I was like, I just want to quit and just see what fucking happens. But realistically, I can't just do that. You know what I mean? And Well, no, I mean, it's different because we at least have each other and like both of them were together in the same, they didn't each own their own business. So they couldn't shut down one business and continue the other. It's the same business.
At a certain point, I think they had enough trouble that Barb had to mortgage her house. And, you know,
nuts,
so
man.
It's not it like they're just walking in and like, I'm going to open a comedy club and exploit everybody I can. You know, like that wasn't the plan. Like they really wanted to be a community of comedians by comedians for comedians. That was how they opened the club.
And I remember I didn't know this. For a long time.
I didn't either. Well, like when I first got there.
Specifically, you were the one, because we talked about it just a couple minutes ago, but I don't think we've ever explained it to any listeners there, but you had told me this and I didn't know this for a long time. You told me this years ago, wouldn't it? Like, these comedians don't get paid.
They don't get paid. Like even the headliners.
Even if it's a regular show.
Yeah.
Right? Like, not just an open mic, but, like, a regular actual
show. Like, you pay to get in, but the comedians aren't getting paid to perform.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's because they're trying to work to grow themselves an audience and to get known.
Yeah.
But and they're actually not getting paid to do it.
There are certain shows where you do get paid, okay. but they tend to be weekend shows in the main room.
Like a more special kind of.
When I started working there, yeah, like I think when I started working there, MCs weren't getting paid, and then they started getting paid. Mm. Like $15 per show.
Which is nothing.
Well, it's $60 a night. Well, sorry, $30 a night. $60 for the full weekend. Like if you're hosting the weekend show.
Could you?
But oh, by the way, when I say the MC started getting paid in the Yoo-Hoo room, that means only on Fridays and Saturdays.
Yeah, yeah.
So what you do,
this is not a regular, you know, you're employed as an you don't have an employer. This is a kind of a freelance job.
It's, yeah.
Right? Yeah. So there is a difference there. Just to be clear, there is a difference. It's freelance work, but it still sucks, you know, right? Like it still sucks. Yeah.
So, I mean, God, there's just so much that's so, it just is, to me, it just doesn't make sense to the business model of like, we're going to ask people to promote their shows, come and work for free. Like, and then act like we expect them to act like it's a real job and that they need to be there on time, early.
Early, yeah.
We need them to promote their shows weeks ahead of time. We need to ask them to get people to come see them one way or another. We don't care how. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to pay them.
And, you know, here's the thing that's interesting about that to me, okay? Because I think especially early on, and I'm sure probably you, if you can remember back, but there's always an early part where, for examples, a comedian or an artist, when you start, it's not because you're planning to do it as a regular career job kind of a thing. You do it because you would really enjoy it. So in a small sense, I can understand that people would be willing to do that.
Willing
to do it for free because they're trying, they just want to do it.
Right? So the argument that I heard when I was kept trying to fight to have the comedians get paid is comedians don't care about getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
Comedians, they just want the stage
time. That's not true, but you can understand the argument as what we just went over.
So when I had my final conversation with Dave about this before I quit, he said that to me and I said, there's a difference between not caring and accepting that it's not going to happen. And so you're making a sacrifice for your art, understanding that it is a sacrifice. It doesn't mean that you don't care, you don't want to be paid, you don't want to have value.
I think there's a bonus to that. I think there's three steps to that. I think there's the not caring.
Mm-hmm.
And then what was the other one you just said? It's accepting. Not caring or accepting it.
Yeah.
There's also both of those and also combined with appreciating it when it happens.
Yeah.
So if you don't expect it, but you get it, it makes you even more enthusiastic about doing it, you know, right?
Yeah, but I mean, I remember because so when I started doing stand-up, it wasn't to make money. Yeah. I legitimately
agoraphobic sister doing stand-up. She literally danced stand-up and she's fucking hilarious.
I am.
But so the fact that she would not expect money makes a whole lot of sense because normally she wouldn't do that as a...
I wasn't planning on doing it for a career. I was going to do open mics for a couple of years and help get over my anxiety. My social anxiety.
It was kind of self-help.
That was it.
Yeah.
And one of the open mics was at Flappers where you could go and it's open auditions. Anybody can audition. If it's your first time ever doing stand-up, you get a cookie.
It's like giving blood. Here's cookie and a band-aid.
Sacrifice your comedy virginity and get a cookie. Yeah. So... I just thought that I would go and I didn't understand how stuff was working. I was working there as an intern, but I didn't understand the behind the scenes stuff, like how you get booked and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I went in thinking, I'm just going to go practice. I'm going to use this as an open mic and let them see. Because I didn't want to be doing stand up other places and then not there.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was ashamed of that I didn't appreciate the fact that they had given me a home, basically, at that point. Like, that's what I felt like. Yeah. So...
Well, you were very attached to these people, because they're cool people.
Yeah, so I did my first audition, which is up on my YouTube channel, and... Oh, my God.
That. It's great.
Yeah. It was,
No, as, like, I wouldn't look at it as a professional comedian, but my sister, I fucking love it.
Yeah. I bought the tape. I bought the tape for $30. which is another racket, but they stopped doing that at a certain point. So,
I forgot about that too.
Only because they didn't want to pay a sound person to be there in case somebody wanted to buy their ticket.
Yeah, I've completely forgot about that. That should definitely be something you just have for free because you did it, you know, that's your work. But yeah, that's crazy.
Anyway, so, I mean, I don't even necessarily agree with that. I say $10 is probably fair to buy a video because you're...
Like an actual sensible price.
Yeah.
You know, it makes... It's the same... Not
because you're paid for the labor of having somebody record it, edit it, and send it to you. Yeah.
Because it's not the same, but it just reminds me of microtransactions in video games.
Yeah.
Where they're way overpriced by 1,000%.
Yeah.
Like 1,000%. Not even exaggerating. This shit should not cost nearly half that much. You know, like not even at all. So anyway. Okay.
So I had no intention of ever getting booked at Flappers. And that's not why I did the audition. I literally just wanted to show them I've been doing this. And then the one audition, like the first audition I decided to do, Dave and Richie were both out of town, and Dave was the owner, Richie was the booker at the time, and I was just like, the first time I decided to do this, like, you're gone, and I was like, should I wait, and I was like, no, so I did it in front of Barb and her assistant. Oh, why am I blanking on her name? She was so nice. I feel like such an asshole right now, but she was very nice.
It's been
nice.
A while, though.
We're Facebook friends, and I'm just blanking on her name. Yeah. I know her name, I'm just blanking on it. Shelley. Okay. I did it for no Barb and Shelley, and Shelley was very sweet. She laughed at, I think, one thing that I said.
it was probably very funny.
And then Barb called out first timer when I got up there. I was like, actually, it's my third time. I had done two open mics before that.
You know what's funny about that to me is I imagine that it was probably funnier. I mean, I'm only guessing that. I think you're a funny person, and I've said this throughout all our lives. You always make me laugh. And
really?
Oh, yeah. We're always laughing at each other and shit.
True.
You know? But we also, you know, we're very close. We recognize each other in a lot of certain ways. You know, there's still stuff we're still learning about each other. But something I knew when I first, like, even I knew this. I knew that I loved your show. Like, I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
But I recognize that a big part of that is because I know you.
Yeah.
You know, like, I imagine it would be different for a stranger.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Although I was, like, I'm just... I think Flappers is the... I mean, oh, sorry. I shouldn't say that. Goodwill was the place where I realized that there was something likable about me. Like, we were just listening to parts. We were trying to figure out the title for a different episode. And so we were listening to parts, and then one of the parts you skipped to was me talking about how I always thought there was something infinitely hateable about me.
Which is nuts to me. That's so horrible. That is so horrible.
It was beat into me when I was young, so whatever. So...
so whatever. We both have the same kind of attitude and mentality to shit like that, right? We're like, whatever, fuck it, that's normal.
Like, you can't cry every time you think about how horrible your childhood was. Yeah. Otherwise, you'd spend no time, like,
doing anything. Well, I mean, it's not even that. It's just, it's become so normalized.
Yeah.
You know, anyways,
but so when I finally, like, got over, when I decided that I wasn't going to be agoraphobic anymore, and I went out and got a job. Mm-hmm. I got a job at Goodwill, and I was a cashier. And, I really genuinely wanted people to like me, and I really genuinely wanted people to be happy with my service.
Mm-hmm.
But I found that the times that people liked me the most was when I just fucking relaxed and just said what I thought off the cuff. I remember, like, multiple times where I'd just be ringing somebody up and I would just say something without thinking about it first, which was very rare for me at the time.
Now, this is how my sister is. It's not rare for me. I will constantly say what's off the top of my head.
I mean, I will.
That's actually my problem.
I mean, that's what this whole podcast is. Yeah. Like, I'm at that point now, but I was not then.
Yeah, yeah.
And but the times when I would do that, people would just say, I love you. Like, it was, and like,
people like, I'm telling,
it wasn't regular,
like, honesty, man.
It would be people I'd never spoken to before, because I was like, oh, if you're in from out of town, I'm never gonna see you again. I can just relax, you know. So I would just, like, say something, and, like, multiple times people would just say I love you after, like, less than a 5 minute conversation, just because, like, I was just being me,
just being you. Exactly.
And so that was the first time I was introduced to the concept that maybe I'm not infinitely hateable.
Not at all. Not even the tiniest
the larger
bit.
World
that's your own. It's we both have this. It's a self-hate. It's literally not to do with other people. It's a self-hating thing.
It's a it's a taught self-hating thing. You've taught to
that,
yourself. But
that works too.
But so Flappers was where I really like kind of came into that where I had so many people like me, and I was, I was at the point, cause mom had been dead for about 3 years when I first got there. It was like just before.
Wait, was she? Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I forgot.
Just before the third anniversary. Like they opened the September that of 2010 and mom died October 2010.
I
don't know
why I forgot that was after mom died. Yeah. So the reason my sister even ended up in this place in the first place, from what I can remember off the, you know, from my seeing it as an observer and hearing about it, was you, this was after our mom died, which I forgot about until just now.
No, she's been dead for a while.
Yeah, no, I mean, when you first started going, when you first started going to this comedy club called Flappers, she originally went there as a hangout spot. You went there and you would read books on your laptop, right?
I was trying to write books.
You were writing and reading. You were just chilling. It was so just a chill spot to go to and
what
hang out.
Happened was I was suicidally depressed after my mom died. And I had been in school, and so I had financial aid. So I had saved up about $8,000. And so, yeah. That's why I was able to not work and still pay the bills for
I'm over here shocked as fuck that my sister had $8,000.
You didn't notice that I continued to pay rent after.
No damn idea. It took us a long time because we were comfortable without knowing exactly what was going on. But eventually we reached a point where we communicate how much fucking money do we have.
Yeah.
You know, like, but there was a while where we did not communicate and we just happened to just go along, you know, right? But no, now we definitely talk about it far more often. Every month I come to my sister and be like, we're about to die right now. Like, you know, like.
And I'm like, no, we've got a couple of months.
Yeah. And she'll be like, well, I've got a little bit. And I'm like, all right. But anyways, no. So yeah, just the fact that she had $8,000, like, and I was not actually aware of that until literally right this
Yeah, so that's, I was like,
crazy, man.
I was like, I can either, quit my job and like not work for 6 months to a year, or I can kill myself. And so I decided to quit my job. That was at Smart and Final. I had only been there for 2 years, and I had been cashier of the year for the first full year that I'd been there. Like, so the first year I was there, I didn't win because it hadn't been a full year. And the second year I was there, I won because I'm white and also awesome.
Well, it's not a race thing. Look, it could be, but you are amazing.
So I mean, no.
I got to give you credit.
I only
for being
say
amazing.
That because I look at the other people who were there, and there were two people who were better than me. And one was Latina and the other was Armenian. Armenian won the next year. So
I can get that. Yeah. Well, when you weren't there, right?
Yeah. But I mean, I was...
But like, you deserve it, though, at the same time. I do
definitely top three. Yeah. But I definitely think that I was boosted up a little bit.
Yeah.
But I also got, 100% on all
shitty?
My...
Isn't that fucking shitty?
Yeah.
Because it doesn't... You know what's messed up about that? And this is, like, the systemic racism. It's not even on purpose in a lot of cases.
Oh,
but
no.
it's just a part of things, which it's is just... fucking stupid.
Yeah.
But...
You get extra points.
You are amazing.
I am amazing.
That's what's messed up about it. Like. Yeah. But you can also recognize the fact that, well, you know, I might not have fucking been first if it wasn't for being white.
I was top three.
Isn't that so screwed
up? I won first place.
Oh, I hate this fucking world, man.
But Agovny won it the next year, and she deserved it. That's like cool. I felt like she deserved it when I won it. And, And so anyway, and it's not like brown people didn't win at the store. It was just like,
No.
You know.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Yeah, it really is that default. It's a default system.
Yeah.
It really is. It's just this passive fucking thing, which is dumb and shouldn't exist, but it really is there.
But to be fair, I did get 100% on my
Sneaker
Shoppers.
Like, I know.
Like every time.
I forgot about that. Yeah. Every single Secret Shopper. Every single one.
Because I always did what I was supposed to do.
Yeah.
And then they would complain that 100%. I was too slow.
100%.
The reason I was too slow is because I was doing it properly.
Yeah. And if they, like, that's what's funny about that. They would complain you're too slow and still give you 100%. Like, how... They,
No. The shopper wouldn't complain I was too slow. Like...
Oh, okay.
The manager.
Oh.
Like, you're so great. Just
managers.
Work a little bit faster. Yeah. But part of the job is you are not allowed to let that customer leave without going around the counter and putting something in their basket to make sure the basket is empty.
Yeah. Isn't that some funny
so
stuff,
so many customers tried to stop me many times, and I had to get sneaky when I could tell that they were going to be like that.
Yeah.
So
isn't
I would
that
just...
stupid?
I would act like
oh my gosh, dude.
I would wait for them for their attention to be like turned, and then I would walk around the counter and they'd be like, oh, I could have done that. And I didn't want to tell them I have to do it because I have to make sure card is empty because, you know, that's whatever. Then Dave said he remembered me from working at Smart and Final. And he said, and you never checked the bottom of my cart. And I was like, that was Ashley. That was Ashley. That was not me. I checked every time.
Some other fat person in the
room. Yes. People used to ask us if we were twins all the time. And it used to drive her nuts. That is so
funny.
And it made me laugh because it offended her so much. So I used to tell them yes.
Well, no, it makes... It makes sense to be offended at that because you're literally being identified by your weight. Not only that, but
I was legit like a decade older than her. And I was fatter than her. So nobody ever wants to take that as a compliment.
It's such a trip because while it's understandable to be offended at that, it's also understandable to recognize that that's what people will do, especially if they don't know you.
Yeah. I had a lady come up to me. I was ringing up a customer and this lady walks up and she's like, I need a refund for this. I'm just going to go get an exchange real quick. And I was like, okay, do you have a receipt? She was like, you just talked to me like 10 seconds ago. And I was like, what? And she's like,
the other fetch.
She's like, I was just here talking to you.
Oh my God.
And then I pointed behind me because I was on register 7 and Ashley was all like at the other end of the registers at register 1. I was like, were you talking to Ashley earlier? And she goes, oh.
And just to be clear, I'm not like going out of my way to call my sister fat. It's just a societal recognition.
Fat.
I'm just saying. This is only for our conversation specifically related to this occurrence.
Yeah.
Because I don't normally refer to you as fat. I don't go, oh, my fat sister.
But we do talk about our dead brother and our dead mom.
Well, dead is different. It's not the same damn thing.
I mean, they have no bodies, and that's what we're remarking on.
That's not identifying them as a certain weight, though. Shut the man. What the fuck, man?
Anyway, the point is. So I think I was still in, still like not graduated. Mom was dead. But I hadn't graduated yet from GCC. That's Glendale Community College. Grandma had a stroke. And I think I was like a year out. Or I was in my last year. I remember because I had to film a social studies project at the same time. And I just happened to have a digital camera. And it was very windy. And we filmed it at Forest Lawn.
Forest Lawn is a cemetery.
It is.
It's very popular, right?
It had beautiful...
Like a really popular, nice cemetery.
It's really nice. And, like, that's where Marilyn Monroe was buried and stuff.
Oh, famous people. That's. I think presidents are buried there, too, aren't they?
Probably.
Some of them, yeah.
So, oh, yeah, I think so. Because there was this huge mural, like, of the president signing the Declaration of Independence that was, like, part of Forest Lawn. And so we chose that as our backdrop to do our little skit.
The assignment, right?
Yeah. So funny.
What was the assignment? I forget.
Ridiculous.
This was a school assignment. I
remember
this.
We had to do a 5-minute video about something that we had learned over the course of the...
So Forest Lawn is not a normal cemetery. It's a very fancy, like...
Yeah. They have statues everywhere.
Special cemetery.
I also went to the cemetery. I went to Forest Lawn because I was doing a drawing class and we had to go draw a statue. So we had to find somewhere to find a real life statue, not to draw from a picture. Mm-hmm. And so I went to Forest Lawn and I drew from a statue there.
Did I go with you that time? Because
nope.
I remember I might have drawn a statue at one point too, because I
That's
did
so
the
funny.
Same thing. Yeah. But I don't, man, that just reminds me of a time where I went and I think I was supposed to draw a statue and I decided not to. I can't remember exactly, but it totally, like, I can think, I'm just like, it triggers something, but I can't get it, you know, it's like gone. But that's very interesting. Anyway, sorry, go ahead. You were doing a statue. Assignment.
So grandma had a stroke. My first reaction, you came and told me, and I was like, all right, whatever. Like, I barely knew her. And mom hated her because
I tell you?
That grandma had a stroke.
Why would I be telling you that? Wouldn't mom tell you that?
Mom was dead.
Okay, where did I find this info?
Sarah.
Was it online?
I think she called.
Oh, so because the reason that I'm confused here is because I don't normally have the family information. So it must have been a Facebook message. Okay. And I was just curious because I was like, wait, what? When did I get this? Because usually my sister knows everything about our family way before I do.
I don't. Especially not anymore. Okay. So I used to know because mom would keep up because she would talk to Sarah a lot.
Yeah.
And then she started talking to Illy like once a week. towards the end.
But this was when she was dying, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Our mom, what was interesting about the coming to the death part was before, it was a month or two or so, probably. Was it? Where she just started reaching out to family more often than we had ever seen her.
She was talking to Illy for like at least a couple of years before she died. Yeah.
Really?
At least, yeah.
Okay. I remember it got more and more so towards the end. Like, she just was far more open to relatives at that time.
I don't think so. She was open to...
I mean, again, this is a different observation.
She was open to Illy and Sarah. That was it. She still hated Kenny. She still hated Myra. Oh, Myra never.
And this is, as an observer, not our actual mom's thoughts, you know, right?
Oh, no. It's specifically what she told me.
Oh, she... See? And as remember, we've thought about this before.
Well, I shouldn't say she hated them. She still had a lot of bitter feelings towards them.
Anger.
And then after Robert's... like robbed grandma.
Our grace. What, how much did he steal from
it's her fault for naming him Rob. That's what I think.
Oh my god, that's so funny, dude.
Mom finally got mad at Robert because he had always been like her favorite sibling. Yeah. Yeah. But she finally got mad at him because grandma, with the money that she had gotten from the divorce, was going to pay for Bubba's gravestone. And so
I did not know that.
She was gonna give mom like $2,000 for a gravestone, and we had never bought him one.
Because we had a tiny little plastic.
He still has a plaque.
Yeah.
And he's been dead for like however long.
I mean, that doesn't bother me too much because I just really don't care about
it. It bothers me. I like. I want to get him a gravestone at some point.
But just as another example. So this was our brother. I was 8, Crystal was 7, and our brother was 5. So he literally has like a little tiny plastic.
It's the default thing that goes over the grave if you don't have a gravestone.
Thing, right? Yeah.
And it's also like before you get a gravestone, like you still want to be able to find the gravesite.
Yeah.
So we just still have never gotten a gravestone.
So on top of that, apparently I did not know this about grandma, or I forgot about it, you know. Yeah. But on top of that, then for similar reasons of why this happens, we can't afford stuff. Are we cremated our mom? We have her ashes in our house because we just could not afford anything real. But I get
that was the cheapest
for me personally.
It was still $900,
and that was paid for by family.
Yeah,
we did not pay for that though. Fortunately and thankfully, to you know, our...
we could have afforded it at the time because of my financial aid. But it was nice to not have to pay for it.
Yeah, no, it was an offer, and that was very cool, very very cool. I mean, I'll never forget it was paid for by an aunt. You know,
well, it was Illy paid for it on the day, but Grandpa reimbursed her.
Oh, did he really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm still grateful for that, you know.
It was nice that Illy was there, honestly. Yeah, like, she was a very calming presence. Mm-hmm. Illy is so unflappable. She's just like...
I didn't know how to describe her,
right?
Because, like, I've always wanted to know her more just because of the way she is. She's so...
like, chill, man. Like, not chill. I shouldn't say chill, because
she's
not,
like... I would
call
her non-existent. She just kind of... She just kind of stands back behind everything, but she's also known to be there. You know what I mean? I'm just like, I don't...
She has a presence.
Yeah.
But she doesn't make it obvious that... Like, she likes to stand back and watch a lot. Not in a creepy way.
It made me want to know her more.
Yeah.
I really did.
I was so impressed with her when we lived with her. I was just like... Cause she was just this tall... I mean, I was a kid, so everybody was tall, yeah. But... she's still taller than me, so... But she was just this tall, like, dynamo, just like, busting around the house, cleaning, cooking, and then just, like, off to work, and just, like, wearing these, like, cool clothes, because they're, like, work clothes. Like, she just always smelled good, and she always had makeup, and she was, like...
I forgot about that, actually.
She was just, like... impressive.
I was... The more I wanted to know her was during Mom's death.
Oh,
it was just, like I said, the way she was, she was there, but not there.
Yeah.
You know? And I was like, I want to know this woman. Like, that's so cool. Like, how can you be there and not be there at the same time? Like, you know?
Practice.
It was very cool. I was like, damn.
So, yeah, she just seemed tired to me by the time she got older. But yeah, I mean, she probably
that makes
tired.
Sense too. Yeah.
But she just now, like when she was younger, she was just like always, like I just remember her as a blur, basically. Mm. She was always moving.
Because I remember we talked about that a little bit before, and I had forgotten, and you reminded me that basically any parent type figures for the most part weren't actually home most of the time because they were working.
Yeah.
But so the reason we got in that is I just for me it's weird because I do care, but I also like, I mean, I care about remembrance, however you, I think it's remembrance, right? I care about respecting whatever, all this crap, but I don't care about gravestones and tombstones and graveyards.
I mean, it's not the top priority. There was a time when I had, like I said, I had $8,000 and I thought about buying a gravestone then. Yeah. But I was like, well, I can do that, or I can live for 2 more months and not have to have a job.
Right.
And be a writer. That was my plan. Okay, right. So getting back to Grandma having a stroke. Grandma had a stroke, and I started visiting her. Well, so initially I was just like, whatever. Like, she was a bad mom. I don't really know her as a grandparent, you know.
I always liked her.
Sure.
I mean, in our personal encounters visiting her, I always liked her.
I didn't have any particular affection for her.
I liked her, yeah.
So at first I
was... And I didn't have the same stories that you might have had that mom might have shared. So I just knew grandma's grandma.
Yeah.
And I liked her.
Yeah. Well, so when I first found out that she had a stroke, I was like, whatever. I just thought she would die in a few days and that would be it. Mm-hmm. But she just kind of hung in there. Mm-hmm. So I started visiting her at the hospital. Oh, you know what? The reason I started thinking about it from her perspective. Mm. She was born in Italy. Her parents died when she was young, very young, and she ended up in an orphanage.
Mm. I did not know that.
Yeah, so she ended up in an orphanage. She was very cruelly treated by the nuns. She got pregnant with Illy by some red-haired American because she wanted to come to America. That didn't work out, so she met Grandpa, and he married her and brought her over to America. And then, Illy, when I was talking to Myra, she said Grandma literally thought that the streets were paved with gold in America.
Literally?
Literally.
Wow,
because
could you imagine?
those were the stories, and they didn't have the internet back then.
Oh, yeah.
So,
still, though. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so she was just, like, mistreated, and then Grandpa turned out to be a child molester, so she had all kinds of, like, anger issues and frustration and, like, disappointments and stuff. So... She was not nice to Mom growing up. I don't know why Mom was the whipping boy instead of Illy, because Illy was the oldest and
Mom was
the next
oldest. Maybe she
was like
me. Maybe she was just independent, you know?
Maybe. Oh, yeah, she was. She was very... I mean,
she stand out as, like, the troublemaker kind of a thing.
I don't think she was a troublemaker, but she was, like... I mean, she's stubborn like you. Like, just naturally stubborn. So, yeah. So Mom was just the whipping boy growing up. So she didn't have fond memories of Grandma. I didn't have... So she didn't... We didn't go around our family very much because she just didn't like them.
Yeah.
She just didn't have good memories of them.
By the time... You know what's funny? What's interesting to me about that is we came to California because our family was here.
Yeah.
But we were always separate from them. We came here because they
were
here.
When we first got here, we lived with Grandma and Grandpa for,
maybe
a month or two.
Oh, I remember that.
We got our own apartment. That was when we moved to the apartment, that Roachfield apartment, behind the Stan's
liquor.
Yeah. So,
I don't even remember it being Roachfield. That's funny.
Oh, yeah. I remember the roaches. I think there was twice that they had, while we lived there, that they had to evacuate and, like,
do the whole tent thing.
Yeah. So anyway, so when Grandma had a stroke, I didn't feel any particular, like sadness for me of the loss or the whatever.
Yeah, no immediate, yeah.
But after about a week, I started thinking about it. Like, if I had grown up in the circumstances she grown up in, and then I, like, grew up and my children didn't love me because I was a bad mom, like, and then my grandkids didn't even have any interest in coming to see me, I would feel really bad. And so that idea made me cry. I don't know why it doesn't make me cry now. Probably the Paxil. But it just made me cry. I just felt, like, bad. So I just went to go see her. I just went to go see her once. Mm. And then she had the stroke. She couldn't talk. And she was like, we didn't even know if she was going to live. So I was like, I'll just keep going to see her till she dies. And then I went once a week until she got out of the hospital. And then she went to a convalescent home in Sun Valley, which is about, like, 20 minutes by car, but, like, 40 minutes by, because I would take 2 buses to get there. Mm-hmm. So I'd go see her. Once I quit my job at Smart & Final, I started to go see her, like, almost every day.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And then it was, like, 3 days a week, and then 1 day a week, and then I stopped going entirely. When I started going to Flappers, it was because I kept passing Flappers on the bus on the way to go see Grandma, and every time I passed it, I was like, oh, a comedy club. I love comedy. I should go see a show there.
You know what's crazy about that? I completely forgot the reason we got into the whole Grandma story.
Yeah.
Because of how you first got to Flappers.
I'm trying, like, to, yeah, nuts, I'm trying, man, to get, yeah, to a point here.
What a story. Jeez, man.
So.
Oh, gosh.
So.
That's nuts, dude.
So I started going to see a Grandma. So when I started going to Flappers, I stopped seeing Grandma as much. Yeah. But also, by the time I had started seeing, like, it had been almost a year when I started going to Flappers that I had been going to see Grandma. I think it was, like, 8 months that I had been seeing her, like, every day, or almost every day. And what I would do, my routine was I would go visit Grandma. I would try to find somewhere quiet to, like, write. And then I'd try to write if I was with her, if she was, like, falling asleep or whatever. Because I had a little laptop with me. And then I would try to find somewhere to just, like, hang out and write. Because I was at home, and you would just be screaming at your computer just randomly. And
No, not my computer, my PS4. I think I was playing Rocket League a lot more often back then.
And it's just,
you
like...
Remember I just recorded that podcast? You were chilling and hanging out. Yeah. And I was talking about bad teammates. That was what I was screaming at that whole fucking time.
So I'll just be sitting in my room trying to write and, like, chill and, like, be creative. And then all of a sudden I'd hear...
Wow. Just so you know, she leaned far away from the mic, so hopefully it wasn't that bad. But yeah, and it wasn't just roaring, it'd be massive profanity. Oh, and...
there'd be profanity, but just the scary part was like Godzilla roar. I was like, I just need to not be here if I'm going to try to be creative, because I can't relax
really,
like that.
And I'm so sorry for that. Okay. But you know what's funny about that to me is, this was maybe a year ago or so, up to a year ago, but... my sister, we were talking about this at one point, and she was like, because we were talking about how I get mad and cuss at people and stuff like that. And so the funny thing to me about this, because I didn't know this about what my sister thought, was she was like, I can't remember how we were talking. I might have even been during a podcast, and you were saying, you were like, the way you talk to some people, oh my gosh, you know? And I was like,
I said, that your Twitch streamers know how you are.
Oh.
And you were like, oh, I don't share that with them.
Yeah, no, that is not live. And that's not to my teammates live either. If I'm screaming about teammates when I'm playing with them, it's not on a mic. Like, it's literally to myself in my own room.
Oh, I assumed that you were just screaming at people.
No, that's so I didn't know that about you. I remember that's what you explained to me a while back. Like I said, it might have been a year ago, but I thought it was so funny.
No, it was like literally like a week ago.
Because I was like, no, like, I'm cussing at these players, but it's literally only to myself. God, oh my gosh, no, I know. I'm evil, dude. I am basically Satan when I'm screaming at my teammates.
It makes more sense to know that you weren't screaming at actual people. That's nice to know.
I would scream out, like, really I would slit your throats, I would kill your mother, you know.
What was really funny is that we had neighbors at the time with very young children, and Jeremy's room is the closest to theirs.
That's actually, you know, it's funny. What's really, so my sister didn't know, but it's a part of it. It's a big part of why I leave my windows shut. It's a big part of it. And even that's not enough.
No, you know? It's not. Like,
yeah. That's a big reason why I
sometimes
have my
I'd
windows
be coming
shut.
Home and I would hear you and I'd be like, oh, Jeremy's here.
No, they could probably hear me a block away, probably. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, so I started.
That's just my multiplayer fun.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
I just started being out. I just started being out with
I am
my
so
laptop.
Sorry though. I did. And you know what's messed up about that is, it of course was not. It was. I mean, I have anger issues, you know, which is a big part of it. But it was never on purpose. You know, I never intentionally was trying to bother my sister. These are outbursts.
I've
you
seen
know,
multiple
these are literal
TikToks.
Outbursts.
I've seen multiple TikToks where. Somebody's like, what it's like to have a gamer brother, and it's the same exact thing. And I'm just like, so relatable.
I gotta see those. You never shared them with me.
Oh, really?
So
yeah,
funny.
We'll watch those later. They're funny.
Okay.
So literally what I just did is just like, this is like, they'll just be on their phone and then from the other room, what?
All right, so that's kind of a relief. I'm so glad I'm not alone.
Well, even Maria,
psycho, man, I am a psycho.
But when Maria was here, she was like, "What are you playing? I play too."
No, that wasn't Maria. No, that was the dude. Remember the dude that transitioned and became a French person?
Oh yeah,
that was who that was. They were like, "I play Final Fantasy. I could recognize a gamer
became a
when I can hear one." Well, you remember became a French, but yeah, I didn't know how to say it. I was like, "Whatever, you were." You were the one that told me they were talking in French at one point, right? Like,
no. So it's this Armenian Armenian person who had moved in next door and was presenting as male, and then at some point
when they first moved
was
in.
Transitioning. Yeah. And like I had run into her at the laundromat before she transitioned. She's like, "Hi, I'm your neighbor." And I was like, "Oh, okay." And then she was like, "Just so you know, I'm transitioning." And I was like, "Oh, okay, cool." And then the next time I saw her, she was like, "Hello." She dressed female and presenting female, but also she was speaking with a French accent. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I understand transitioning.
No, I think that's
from male to female, but why did you transition into a French person?
I kind of was gonna say, like, I think that's cool, and because, you know, and this is my mentality where we're still at. I'm not gonna get into that, but I do. I mean, it kind of, I completely understand wanting to start over new.
I understood that's, too. You know, I get it. So I thought
that was interesting.
That was just the first time I'd ever seen anybody do that.
You know, it's not normal. So
you're usually
like,
you just change your gender, not your accent, you know? Yeah.
So no, I actually,
oh my God.
That was actually so my funny. Favorite part about that. Even though it is funny as a natural, like, first time, you know, hearing about it kind of thing or whatever, encountering it. It is funny because you're like, wait, what? But I really do. I actually fully understand wanting to start over and just being a completely different person.
I completely understand. Yeah.
Anyway,
so I was just out. I was out all the time. And I was always trying to find somewhere quiet to write because, like, going, like, to a restaurant during the middle of the day or whatever, it's not really quiet. But the first time I went to Flappers, it was just to check it out. Like, I was like, if I'm going to come see a show here, I'm just going to go inside and see what it's like inside first. When I happened to walk inside, they were open because they were doing an open mic. And the other reason was because they were open for lunch for, like, about 6 months. And that 6 months was the time that I went in there. It said now open for lunch on a sign outside. And I was like, okay, if they're now open for lunch, that means they're probably not too busy during lunchtime. Mm-hmm. So I'll just go hang out and it'll be dark and quiet and I'll just get to write my book. be a real writer.
She's an amazing writer.
Yeah. So
I'll never not be able to compliment her because it's just a natural thing, whatever.
So I just, the first time I went in there, they were doing an open mic and I just kind of sat in the back and watched and just was like so fucking impressed with just the whole thing. Like, I didn't realize they had just opened, like, in 2010. Like, everything felt lived in because they'd bought a lot of used stuff. It was a 20s themed place, so they had, like, and also they were working on a budget, so everything was secondhand. Everything just felt lived in, and it just was very cozy. Even though the theme was black and red, and I hated black and red because our high school colors were black and red.
It's funny because that's also why I hate it, but I can't help but like black and red. It looks really good.
I don't like black and I don't like red in particular. Mm-hmm. Honestly, it's like black is.
It's
cool,
like I'm I hate yellow. Yeah.
Do you hate yellow? Yeah, I love yellow. It depends on the shade, but yeah. Like, I'm very particular about the shade, but I do like yellow. So I just was like, and I think actually the first time I went there was a Monday. Either the first or second time I was there, they were doing a podcast in the main room. And I just was like, I was just sitting in there writing, because there was nobody in there, and I was just like, I'm just gonna chill in here because there's nobody in here. And then they came in and did a podcast while I was sitting there, and I was like, okay. And then I went up to Barb and was like, it's okay that I sat in? She's like, oh, sure, are you a comedian? I was like, no. She's like, okay, well, cool. And so when I went outside of the podcast, they were doing an open mic, and so I just sat in and watched the open mic, and then I just kind of made that my routine. I'd go visit grandma, try to find, you know, I'd go to Flappers because they were open for lunch, try to work on my novel, mostly, like, mm-hmm. just fart around.
And then it became just a chill place to hang out.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was always trying to write the book,
yeah.
And I actually got to, like, 78,000 words on one story and, like, I think, like, 90,000 words on another story, but neither of them is publishable. Or, like, cohesive stories at all.
Though you said, if I could be remembering, mistaking stories, but didn't you say you had a lot of plans, you were going to go back and kind of touch them up?
I can't touch them up because there's no story there. Like, no. There's words, but there's no story. So
I thought those were the ones you were going to go touch up.
I think I was going to at some point, and then I realized there's just not enough story, so I have to actually figure out
what
happens.
So maybe you can use parts of it for something else.
I think, I have to start over, but I have a better grasp on the characters now. And for me, the character is the easy part. It's just, I just, like, what do I do with them, you know? So anyway, so I went So I made that a habit, and then I started watching. So I just started watching open mics, and then I'd walk home afterwards, and just like chill and kind of process. Because being around people is like, I can get a vulnerability hangover even if like I don't talk to anybody. Like just, and it's not even a vulnerability hangover. It's just a different kind of hangover. Just like being around other emotional people, processing other people's energies, and like just being in a room filled with energy, which is an open mic, even if it's low energy, which a lot of open mics are. I mean, at the time it was very new and exciting, but I also like some of them were just like, oh God.
Yeah, she's told me many horror stories of open mics.
I mean, some open mics are just fun, and like I loved.
I've been to a few. There were a couple I really loved.
Taylor Dean hosted on Mondays, and that was my favorite one.
He was so great. Yeah.
He was such a sweetheart. And then I started watching the auditions because they had auditions, and like I was the only audience member for that, the podcast, these open mics, and I would laugh at everything. I would laugh at premises. I'd laugh at the beginning of premises. I didn't know to wait, and I didn't know how to hold
when something's funny.
Back.
You think it's funny?
I was so fucking depressed at that time. Like legitimately, I would cry anytime I was alone.
Yeah.
I would cry on the bus to school, on the bus home from school. I'd cry in the bathroom at school.
I forget you told me about that before.
I would cry walking to work, and I'd cry walking home from work. Mm. And so I'd cry on the bus to visit grandma. I'd cry on the bus back from visiting grandma. So the first night that I went to Flappers, I walked home and was just kind of processing. I was like, I got to bed and I was like, I want to go back there tomorrow and see, you know, see what it's like tomorrow, you know? And it was the first night since mom had died that I hadn't cried. And then I didn't cry for like 3 weeks, like as every day I would just go back to Flappers. And I just was just so excited to be there that I just didn't cry for 3 weeks.
Wow.
And then like, you know, like eventually like, you just get used
to
things.
Yeah.
But it wasn't as bad. And like by that time people were starting to recognize me. And I remember walking into Flappers thinking to myself, I'm just going to go in. I'm going to be an observer. I'm not going to talk to anybody. I'm not going to get to know anybody's name. I don't care about their hopes and dreams. I just want to write my book. I just want to sit in a dark, quiet corner and write my book. I don't need to be involved in anybody's anything. And then, you know, how that works. And the reason that I had made this, like, I was giving myself this anti-pep talk is because I knew how I was. I always wanted to make other people comfortable. I wanted to know, like, mom taught me, like, how to just talk to people and get them to tell you who they are. And so I would do that, and I was just like, I liked doing it, but it was also draining. So I was just like, I'm not here for them. I'm here for me. So I'm just going to be here for me. But I have more boundaries now. Like I have 2 or 3, but back then I had 0. Like I had negative boundaries. I had like minus 15. So I just ended up getting to know everybody and just really loving everybody there, like working there, comedians, you know, whatever. Like the nice thing about being there was that we were all there for the same reason. We all loved the same thing, you know, or at the very least had an appreciation for it. Because some of the servers were just like, it might be fun to work at a comedy club, you know, as opposed like they didn't. And a lot of the servers were comedians, so you know. And then a lot of the box office people were comedians, and then some of them were just like, it might be chill to work at a comedy club, you know.
You know, it reminds me of that kind of sucks about that is when, I mean, this was something you told me, and I can recognize it because it makes sense, but when you're working towards trying to grow your own audience, it's harder for you to be there as well as the audience, so, you know. So, I mean, this was even the same for me as Twitch. When I first started, my first couple of years when I was on Twitch, I could not watch other streams. It's mostly because when I would watch a stream, I wanted a game so badly. Like, I could not watch somebody game and not want a game, and I would go turn on a game and, fuck this, I can't watch these guys play, I'm gonna go play a game, you know? So it's not exactly the same, but I, when you were telling me these stories about how comedians would go to open mics or whatever, and then they'd leave as soon as their set was
over. Yeah, oh, that would make me so mad.
They wouldn't support the other comedians as well, and they're all comedians.
Because what would happen is you'd have a room of, like, 30 to 40 people, And the first couple of sets are really good because you have the most people with the most, that's the most amount of energy for the mic. Mm-hmm. Everybody's excited to be there. There's still a lot of optimism and the energy is good.
And it just slowly kind of empties out.
It empties out. The energy goes down. Yeah. Like the people who aren't going to get up get mad or they're mm-hmm. just like getting more anxious. Mm-hmm. You know, and people just stop being there for each other.
So it's understandable, but it sucks, you know?
Yeah, so it's just really frustrating. Another mm-hmm. thing is because we live in, like, L.A. area, they can run off to another. We're not in the middle of Nebraska where nobody has anywhere else to go.
Oh, right, this. Yeah, there's not one club to go to. There's yeah. hundreds.
So they're running off to do, like, six more mics a yeah, night. Yeah. And so that's what they're thinking about. Mm-hmm. But to me, it always just didn't make sense just because... I mean, I got it after a while, honestly. I got it after a while because you do see the same people mm-hmm. saying the same jokes
yeah, everywhere
at every mic. Yeah. And after a while, like, especially if they're not good jokes or not good comedians, you just start to get, like, fatigue.
Well, I think part of it is just, like you even started to recognize it after a while, but and them recognizing as well, they probably want to be supported, but they already know what's going to happen, kind of a thing, you know? So it's just like, well, yeah. I need to get my own shit done, so I'm mm-hmm. going to go do my thing, you know? Like,
yeah, and it's kind of the grind mentality in LA, yeah. too, is like... Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's the grind of anything.
Just always be busy. Always be busy. Like, it doesn't matter...
Everything in our life is a grind, so...
There's no... Like, the thing about stand-up comedy is that you're the best at it if you're in the moment. And mm-hmm. what they're doing when they go on stage is they're trying to adjust being in the moment in a matter of 3 minutes and then get off stage and go be in their head and then get back on stage for 3 minutes, be in the moment. Like, that's not how that works. So if you want to know how to be in the moment
is very natural.
You can't just be in the next place in your head. Yeah. You have to, like, know how to be where you are.
Be where, yeah. Yeah.
So that was the thing that didn't make sense to me about, like, mm-hmm. certain comedians, like, just not being able to be in the room.
When like I said, it's also understandable.
Yeah.
Because when you're in that grind, it becomes so normal, you forget sometimes, like, why you started the grind.
Yeah.
Where to kind of balance your own self during the grind. Like, yeah. You just get lost in the grind.
You do.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Being productive for productivity's sake. Yeah. So, but that was really something that was frustrating to me in the mm-hmm. beginning. And then I just
It's very sad to know. I remember because you told me it happened every time.
I mean, my first time doing stand-up was at Taylor Dean's open mic. It had to be Taylor Dean's open mic because he was the host that I loved. I loved John too, but John Parr was on Tuesdays, but was it John Parr's mic that I did?
I don't remember.
It was Taylor. I remember Taylor being
I love
there.
Taylor, man. I think I only saw him, I think I saw him twice. He was just great.
He was so great. So I did. By the time I got up, I was the, I think, second to last person. There were seven people in the room. One of them was the bartender. One of them was Taylor. One of them was Madeline. And the one of them was me, and the other three were sitting at the bar, at the far end of the bar. Yeah. And, like, it's just a very long room. That particular mm-hmm. open mic is in it's at a bar, and it's, like, just a long, narrow room, and you're at one end, and then everybody else is at the other end. I was so fucking awkward. Like, I had 5 minutes of material. I did it in 3 minutes because mm-hmm. I was too nervous to pause for breath, mm-hmm. and I couldn't pause for laughter because there wasn't any.
Yeah, yeah.
And then afterwards, Madeline said to me, you know, that was really great. You were so good. I'm so proud of you. And all you need to do next time to get people to laugh is just be funnier.
Fucking Madeline, dude. Oh, my God. Just be funnier. Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Just or just be funny.
Just be happy.
Just be funny. I remember that, but also
so funny.
Yeah. Anyway.
I can totally see Madeline's.
And she was so sincere and just so sweet about it. Like, it was just...
She meant well, but what a stupid thing.
Oh, my God. It was funny in my head.
Oh, my gosh.
But anyway, so doing it to dead silence was, like, so uncomfortable. So the second time I did stand-up, it was at a Mouthy Pants open mic. Hosted by Whitney Melton and, why am I blanking on her name? I love her. Fuck. Kim Kroll. And, that was the most fun mic, like, in LA. Like, just the vibe. There were so many people there. It was an 8-hour mic.
Wow. So, holy crap.
Yeah. So no matter how late you went up, like, some people would just, they would stay the whole time. Mm-hmm. And then there was a bar and then there was a separate room for the mic. So, So there was always people, there's like 80 people show up to this mic, and so like at least 40 people are in the room at any given time.
That's cool.
And some people come later because they're like getting off work or whatever, or they're coming from another mic. So there's always people in the room. And it was just so fun. And those were the ones that I went to with, like, The and Cherie. So my second time doing stand-up was with The and Cherie. And so...
Just so you know, just The is actually the name of a person. Literally, his name is The.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, it's so funny. I'll never forget the first time you ever called me. I was like, huh?
People always assume his name is Doug.
So continues. That is, just, I have wanted to clarify that because that is funny. Yeah.
So it with The and Cherie, and it was just the most fun. And I remember when I got up and I said my first joke, and I was like, "Oh, please laugh. That was supposed to be funny." And then everybody laughed, and then I did it for my second joke, and it wasn't the same payoff. So I just did the rest of my set.
It was more natural the first time. Right?
Well, no, it was just because they were reacting, but I was just like, you can't beg for laughter at the end of every joke.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, that's not a good comedian. And I already knew that. I was just so fucking like nervous and desperate. Like, so, yeah. And I actually have a picture of me at that mic, like holding up a fake cigarette because I was doing an impression of Mom.
You did an impression of Mom?
I did an impression of Mom.
Oh my God.
I asked Mom what attracted her to Dad. And she used to be a smoker, so she'd tell me stories.
Hardcore. Oh my gosh. What is it, up to 5 packs a day?
It was, I don't think, it was 5 a lot. Packs.
Like, at least 2, though.
At least 2, yeah. But anyway, so she was...
She quit before she, like a year or 2 before she died?
Oh no, a decade.
Was it a decade?
Yeah.
Holy crap. See, that's why time is so weird. I cannot track it at all, man. I can't track it.
Yeah, so... Yeah, so
you did an impression of Mom. Like,
because one time I had asked her what initially, like, I know he turned out to be a bad person, but what initially attracted you to Dad? Mm-hmm. And she was like, nothing. And I was like, what do you mean nothing? She was like, what do you mean? And I was
like, what the hell, dude?
And I was like,
oh my God.
Well, you got together with him and had 3 babies with him. Like there must have been a reason you were with him. And she was like, oh. Yeah, he was okay. He was shorter than me.
What?
That mattered to her, because being tall, she was very self-conscious about being tall.
She was
wanted a taller guy. Yeah. So she was like, he was shorter than me, but he was okay looking. But the reason we got together is because his friend was dating my friend. Because she lived in a trailer at the time. Mm. And so her trailer mate was dating Dad's friend. Mm-hmm. They had run away from the army together, I think. And so Mom was just like, well, this one's here, I guess.
That kind of makes sense, because sometimes you just end up with people you're around.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So, I mean, I can
understand
that. And
she didn't think she could get pregnant for reasons that we won't go into right now.
Okay.
But,
That's an interesting one on me. New to me, people. New to me. All right. But
so she got pregnant with you, and then Dad was like, well, I'm not gonna... I think the laws in Ohio at the time were, if you weren't married to the mother, you had to adopt your children. Yeah.
Really? Whoa.
So he was like, I'm not gonna adopt my kids, we're gonna get married. And then they moved back to Ohio because he had like family there and whatever. And how did we get on this topic? I was doing an impression of Mom talking about how not interested he was in Dad.
I forgot. That's so funny. That is some interesting stuff. I don't even know that stuff.
I love that story. God. It just made me laugh so hard.
Right,
so
the impersonation.
So I have a picture of me like holding my fingers like a cigarette at that mic. Mm-hmm. But that was the most fun mic. So anyway, so the whole point of like us talking about this was I was not doing stand-up because I wanted it to be a career, although I definitely had fantasies of like stadiums full of people just screaming and everything I said, cool. You know.
Yeah.
But really I was just trying to get over the social anxiety because I just cared so much what other people thought of me, and I just wanted to care less. And I just thought that stand-up was a good way to like kind of practice being in front of people. Mm-hmm. And also the other thing that appealed to me were, there's 2 things, like listening at open mics to the same joke about how all women are whores, whether you pay for dinner first or later.
Oh, I hate those jokes. Oh my gosh. The whole dinner meal crap.
Pay up front or you buy dinner. Either way, they're whores. And one way you get laid and the other one you might not.
You know what's funny to me about that is, I'm assuming, I don't actually know, but there's all kinds of reasons. But one of the things I think it's so hard for me to to appreciate those jokes or even want to appreciate them, mm-hmm. because I don't want to. I don't, most of the time, I don't even think they're funny, but I'm a virgin. Oh. I am not used to dating, you know, I don't date. So even if I wanted to think they're funny, like it's impossible for me to think they're funny. You know
hashtag
what I mean?
Unrelatable.
Like, pretty much.
I mean, and honestly, like your mindset would still have to be like,
I'd still have to be an asshole, I would think.
Right? You'd still have to think that women are whores one way or another. Yeah. I remember one time you were like, I can't have a girlfriend because I don't have any money. And I was like,
the truth, though. And I didn't mean like I couldn't afford an actual girlfriend. I can't afford actively
courting someone.
Yeah. I didn't mean like pay for her like she's a hooker or something.
I know. But after
it's like
hearing,
living, like I can't live in a home without paying fucking rent, you know?
Yeah.
Like that's what I mean. Like,
not the same thing, but I understand where you're coming from. I just remember being irritated by that at the time.
I forgot about that. Because I remember having that conversation and I thought to me it made sense, you know? Like, because I was just saying I can't afford a date, basically. But I didn't mean that I can't afford the girl herself, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not buying the girl,
you know?
Like, so funny, man. I'm like, I'm sorry. I know that is funny, though.
But anyway, like, so... But just hearing the same misogynistic bullshit over and over. And by the way, this was not everybody. I wouldn't even say it was like the majority, but it starts to feel like it after you've heard it so much, multiple people, at least two or three people out of 30 people at every single mic
every
you go
time.
To.
Yeah.
It gets to be exhausting to hear that. I mean, and sometimes I just wanted to be on stage because I was like, a female voice needs to be in this room right now.
And there are plenty of them, of course, you know. You know who
no,
I
there's
still love?
No.
Well, I just mean, it's the ratio thing, right? But there are women out there.
Yeah.
You know, I love Wendy. I still love Wendy Starling.
Oh,
she
yes.
actually.
Wendy Starling.
Starling. She actually, I forgot. I don't watch them every time, but she actually has new videos on her YouTube channel.
She does?
That's how I came across her again. This was like a month ago. I was like, oh, I forgot about her, you know. I just hadn't seen her in a long time, and I saw like one of the new videos and I was like, oh my gosh, and I went watching it. So she's funny, like I like her.
I love her. I need to subscribe to her channel. I didn't even realize she had one.
Yeah, I totally
I should have, because I have one. And
you,
I
you might be subscribed because I don't think she did content for a while. I can't remember. I just didn't follow it, you know. And then I came across a new video and I was like, oh my gosh, I forgot all about her. Like,
I used to also follow a lot of comedians on YouTube, and I unfollowed all of them just because when I think about comedy, sometimes it just makes me angry.
Oh, you know what's funny? I'm sorry. You unfollowed them because you were clearing it out, right? Kind of.
I was just like, oh yeah, I was unsubscribing and then I unfollowed everybody I know on Facebook.
Yes.
And so I only see the people posting in like the creative groups that I'm in.
That's what reminded me about a week ago, Dark Alchemy mentioned, he said, I think your sister unfriended me on Facebook.
Oh no, I didn't.
Yeah. No. So I don't know for sure, but I told him, I said, I was laughing so hard in my head and here just in my chair because I had forgotten. I remember it was like a year or two ago, probably it could have been even a few years ago. But you, I remember you told me you cleared out your friends list.
What's his real name? Like, type in his real name.
It's Jay. J-A-Y.
Oh, I'm still friends. Jay Juris?
Yes, yes.
I'm still friends with him, I think.
Like, you might poke him or something. I don't know. But he's like, I think you're still friending me. And I thought it was so funny because...
Oh, I guess I did.
Because I forgot until he said that.
I might have assumed he was a comedian.
I told him, I said, she just basically wiped her friends list out, you know, like...
I didn't, but I started unfriending a lot of, like,
names
that I didn't
recognize. That when you first told me, though, you were like, I'm just clearing out my friends list, and I thought it was so funny. But I also understood it, you know, like, I was like, all right. So when Dark Alchemy told me that, I thought it was so funny that he was one of the people that you just happened to have cleared out, you know? And obviously that will happen when you're not constantly interacting.
Well, and also his name is Dark, not Jay.
No, for sure. Yeah. We think of him as Dark Alchemy, not Jay. No, so that's pretty damn funny, man.
Sorry, Dark. I just sent you a friend request. So usually I leave my phone in my room, but I just happened to be hanging out here earlier. So
we were talking about impersonating mom and comedy stuff, and
I had unfollowed all the comedians.
Yeah,
but anyway, so at the time, I just wanted to get over the social anxieties, and I really didn't understand like the kind of the attitude that a lot of comedians had. it just seemed, they seemed entitled and just like disgruntled. And I was like, are you just trying to be cool? I didn't realize that a lot of it was just because they've been ground down.
Yeah. No, that's so we talked a little bit about this before we started the podcast, in generalization. And you reminded me of how, like, I can't help it. It's the way I grew up. It's most of my experience, specifically as a child, though. And it's something I can't forget because it's my most social interaction with anybody ever. Like, you know, after I got out of school, I've had way less interaction with people. Even if I work in public, like, it's still a lot less interaction than I had. I was constantly around people in groups, large groups, all the time as a kid, as a teenager and everything. So it's definitely different. Even if I were to work in a public store or something, or even a McDonald's, like, I'm still not hanging out with the groups of people all the time, you know. So things change. So my memory, though, I'll never forget, because I grew up like this. I grew up around women, and my family was women. Everybody and I, my sister, my mom, basically for the most part. And then in school, it ended up this way. Most of my friends, the ones that I liked and I actually went out of my way to spend more time with, were girls. They were all female. And when I did end up hanging out with guys, they were usually assholes. And just not always in a bully type way, but just generally just egotistical, like macho, whatever kind of stuff. Posturing. You know?
I mean, you had some like decent.
I've had plenty of good friends.
Yeah.
I could name a whole bunch of them, but just I don't want to name them now in case they ever listen, but because I don't want to like specifically point out people and they'll be like, what about me?
I'll name the ones I liked.
That would be different, yeah. But I mean, there were people that stood out in comparison to the typical male type of attitude, yeah. Right? Because we were specifically talking about generalization, and I was saying, you know what, while it does suck, it also makes sense. Even stereotypes, if you're going to generalize, they do make sense. There's a reason they exist.
You just can't use it as a rule. Like, you're an 18-year-old male, your first time on stage, you're going to talk about your penis. Like, 95% of you will.
That's why you can generalize. But there's the other
5%.
Yeah.
I always was so happy when somebody auditions, man. And it was like their first time. They were a guy doing their first time, and they didn't talk about their dicks. I was just like, thank you for talking about your family and anything else. Oh, my God. Well, so this is where the other generalization we were talking about comes in terms of comedy, is like there's the two kinds of reasons that you start doing stand-up. One is either because you know that you want to be in front of people talking, and you just don't know what to say yet. You don't know what you want to say. You're still trying when you start out to figure out what they want to hear or what they want you to talk about. And then after a certain point, you realize, oh, it's about what I want to talk about. And then they're going to relate to that. And then that you have the people who know what they want to talk about, and they may not necessarily have the desire to be on a stage in front of other people, but they just need a platform to say what they think. And so that was me. That was the reason I started doing it. I had a lot of anger and grief to work through, and I didn't feel comfortable talking to people in the world about it, because when I would try to, I was always end up like just feeling not understood, not listened to, and then preached at about how you just need to get over it and whatever. And I just wanted to be like, I don't want to fucking get over it. I need to fucking find a way to live with it. Like, you can't get it's like saying, like, oh, you're still sad about your dead mom? I'm like, well, she's still fucking dead, isn't she?
Well, it reminds me of, I won't ever forget, there's a couple times when I told our mom to just get over it, literally, over our brother's death.
Yeah.
There was a couple times, I think I was a teenager, but I was just upset, so mad. And I can't remember, I'm just dumb, you know, but I remember telling her, just get over it, and I will never forget that. You know, I'll never forget that. I think back to it. I'm like, oh my gosh, what a dumb idiot I was. You know, and that's just part of mistakes and lessons learned and that kind of thing. Well, you know,
like, loss hit you differently as a kid than it does as an adult.
Well, it's also, I mean, I think specifically when I would say something like that, it was just more out of anger than actual normal, yeah, normal thoughts or whatever. It's just, I think I was just mad. So what I would like to do right now is either maybe finish this up and if you have a finish for this specific story, or we could take a break, because I do want to take a break, and we could put a little bit of music on for a minute or two.
How long have you been going?
A minute and 20 minutes.
An hour and 20 minutes?
Yeah, or a minute and...
minute and 20 seconds? It feels like longer.
A minute and 20 minutes, you know. Oh my gosh, I need to pee really bad. This happens to my brain when I gotta go to the bathroom.
Let's end it and then we can come back and do it.
So what I was curious is if you had like a wrap up kind of a thing. We didn't even, like, this wasn't even a conversation we actually planned out or even as a topic. We just ended up talking about it, you know.
Which, yeah,
is cool. Yeah,
no, I think we're good for right now.
Okay.
Yeah, we can come back in.
Because I want to come back in a couple minutes, yeah, if you want to. So I was wondering if you wanted to take a break or just kind of chill on this one and end it off like a...
Oh, yeah, let's just end this. Oh, let me do the outro song.
All right,
do you
want
to say anything else?
Thank you very much for listening. We mostly just talked about the comedy club, and I can't remember how we got into it, but it was cool, though. Like, it was cool. Yeah.
All right, and thank you for listening, Dark. If you're there, answering my Facebook friend request. Wags, if we're not friends on Facebook, just find Jeremy and then friend me. I'm Crystal Cherie Rich.
He's not on Facebook
yet. Oh, okay. And then Blue Soda, if you're there, then I'd be happy to friend you. Just message me and say that you're Blue Soda, and then we can be friends. Because I don't know your real name.
Thank you very much for listening.
I'm assuming that's not your real name.
And you know, it could be like Prince. And remember, I wanted to change my name to Maximus. But this is our 10th episode.
Holy shit!
Isn't that crazy? So, and again, I said this earlier when we first started recordings. We haven't even uploaded the 5th one yet. That'll be in 3 days from now.
Cool. And Robin's going to come get me on next Friday.
Yeah, which I thought was going to be today.
Yeah, no. So we're going to build up a few of, like, just having some in the can. And then when I get back, if we still have a lot, then we can
just
start.
So what happened today, and I don't know, the main reason for this podcast specifically, and this might be why some episodes you might find like, why is this so boring? Or whatever it is you feel. It's literally us just chatting. There's no such thing as a script. It's us just hanging out and chatting. We're not
no outline. There's, yeah, no,
we're not specifically purpose. We're not specifically going out of our way to entertain. We do hope you like our stories, but that's why it might be a little, you know, you might wonder why you're listening to us. I don't know. Like, I love it though. That's the reason we started, because I love my chats with my sister every time.
I kind of think about it like the Vlogbrothers. Like, they literally just started posting their vlogs online of them just talking to each other because they just want to.
Something
keep
I'm
touch.
Not used to, and I know that it's, when I've seen stuff like that in the past before, it's not usually something I'm interested in. But again, we've talked about that before too. Different. Sometimes it just kind of grows on you, you know? So anyways, thank you very much for listening, and have a great day. And we'll be back with more episodes very soon. For now, we have a lot planned for the next few months. So we'll see if we end up doing maybe 2 a month or
oh yeah, when I get back from Robbins, we'll decide how many episodes
we might end up doing more podcasts weekly instead of
it just depends. Except if nobody's listening, it doesn't matter anyway.
Well, just letting you know that it's possible, because we're chatting more often, and the reason for that is we have the motivation and incentive to share our stories and it gets us to talk more often than we usually would without this podcast.
Yeah.
So thank you very, very much for spending time with us and hearing us out and all that kind of stuff. And we'll do our super cool new theme song. And we'll talk to you next time or whatever.
All right. Here's our outro song for today's episode. I'm such an amazing lyricist, by the way.
I know.
Thank you for listening to the Poor Rikes talk about being poor and other kind of depressing things. Da 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 da. Poor.
Poor. We're motherfucking poor.